What's up, everybody? We have 10 minutes here. It is just your hosts, Mark and Jimmy, with you right now. We did a little podcast a while back, full-lengther. It was all about different optics for different hunts. And with the time of the year here, at least at the time of this recording, being around that fall time, and we know everybody's getting ready to hit the woods, we figured we'd break it out and just talk about one, a very popular style of hunting, whitetail hunting. And just go through the basic optic loadout that we would recommend, that we would use, just give you some food for thought in that area. So, Marco, what do we have on the table here? What types of optics do we have? And then we'll get into the specific ones.
So, Jim, we've got some good ones here. And these are probably fall within kind of like our, you know, entry level type optics. Not to say that you can't go super high end, because you can go as high as you want to go to get, you know, different levels of performance. But these are optics that will get it done, and they'll do it well. So I guess that's what I'll say about that. So we've got three rifle scopes here. If you're going to kind of go good, better, best, we've got our Crossfire 2 3-9x40. We've got our Diamondback 4-12x40, and then our Viper HS 2.5-10x44. And you'll notice kind of some consistencies within the magnification range here. Not a ton of magnification. I'd say a lot of whitetail shots are taken with even bow distance type ranges. Mm-hmm. I know here in Wisconsin, and we're talking, you know, shooting across a cut cornfield, I think the furthest shot I've ever taken is like 330 yards, you know, which is a decent poke, but well within the capabilities of these magnification ranges. And again, not that a person couldn't get in a super long range scenario. You're shooting across some bean field, and if you're set up for it, go for it. But in most instances, I'd say rifle scopes like this will get it done.
I think some people get freaked out a little bit, too, because it just depends on where you are and where you're from. Mm-hmm. Like here, if I saw 330 yards in Wisconsin, I'd be like, that's a poke right there.
Right.
330 yards when you go out to Wyoming, where you can see for miles and miles and miles, you're like, I could throw a rock and hit that.
Right. That might be your starting point.
Yeah. Well, and it's all just, too, based on it's depth perception. It's all relative, you know. But once you actually get in behind the scope and, you know, you crank it up to 9 power, 10 power, 12 power, whatever, it does bring stuff in nice and close, close enough that you would be able to make a good shot. So,
oh, absolutely. And Jim, you know, we were talking about this earlier. We did a podcast with some World War II guns the other day, right?
Yeah.
And talking, you know, we're talking about, okay, well, magnification is sufficient, you know, for whitetails, most situation scenarios. We were shooting open sights, I'd say, pretty darn accurately out to 300.
Repeatedly. On a 3/4 size IPSC target.
Right. And then having impacts even at 400, right? So yeah, we're talking open sights, no magnification. So,
right,
you know, 10 or 12 power, 9 power ought to get you what you need to do.
Mm-hmm. So you talked about rifle scopes right away. Of course, the assumption here right now, we're talking about rifle season. If you are bow hunting, maybe a rifle scope isn't necessary. Other stuff we have here on the table for those listening, just right off the bat, we do have range finders, a binocular, and a spotting scope. So, Marco, what do we get into next? Maybe in order of, I don't want to say importance, but in order of absolute necessity. We talked about the rifle scope.
You know,
where would we go from there?
If I was going to say absolute necessity, and I'd say for bow hunters, for sure, range finder. I mean, these days, you can get into a rangefinder. We've got the Impact 1000 here. You got plenty of ranging capability. I think that retails for about $200, $199, something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, very very price friendly, but high performing rangefinder. It's fast. You're getting angle compensated readouts. It's got a black LCD display. So just a really, really solid performing unit that isn't going to kill a person in their pocketbook. Now, we all know game can be super active early in the morning and late in the evening. And so we've also got the Ranger 1800 here. You know, so you're going to get reflective ranges to 1800 yards, as the name implies with the Ranger 1800.
Mm-hmm.
But it has an illuminated display, right? So the reticle, you're going to have three brightness settings, I believe. And you're going to be able to customize that to the lighting that you're in, depending on time of day. And that reticle is going to, you know, show up, you know, possibly at that. They'll all show up, so I don't want to discount.
No, but it's not even just the reticle. It's also the numbers that pop up on the screen when you point the reticle where you want and you hit the range button.
Right.
Because I've used the Impact at low light scenarios. And it's, I mean, it's like trying to I mean, a black LCD screen, imagine a calculator screen, right?
Right.
That's what you have without an illuminated background.
Mm-hmm.
And so try reading that when it's dark out. It's just a fact.
It's a little more difficult.
Especially when you have thick brush and timber and all that stuff obscuring. In the bright daytime, it's no issue at all, but it does get a little bit more difficult, you know, and you might be able to get the reticle on the, you know, animal or whatever it is that you want to range, but then you got to be able to read that and trust the number that you saw and not have to squint at it too much or take too much time. It happens fast, so.
Yep. The Ranger actually also has this clip on it. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see this clip on the side of the unit. Amazingly handy. I use the clip all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Big clip guy.
Oh, yeah. Big clip fan. So I'm surprised you didn't say the next one in order of like absolute necessity would be the binos.
Well, and that's going to be whether you're bow hunting or rifle hunting. If you're not carrying a good set of binos on your chest, you are doing yourself a disservice. And so that's probably, you know, other than, you know, the implement for aiming here with the rifle scopes or, you know, archery hunters, you know, you need to know the range. Rifle hunters do too, but I'd say that's a little less critical in the Midwest. Generally, you're going to get a shot where you may not need a rangefinder, or not always, you know.
And if you're shooting a caliber and a cartridge that's, you know, hopefully something that stays pretty flat for the first 200 or so yards,
mm-hmm.
you got a pretty good window of forgiveness there if you estimated incorrectly. You
right.
know, I'd say if you estimated, yeah, that deer looks like it's 100 yards away, but it's 150, are you really in that bad of a spot if you...
Right. Definitely a lot. There are definitely times where you do need it. I always have mine on me, no matter what.
Sure.
But the binos there, though, you got to have a good set of binos on your chest. And mm-hmm. these Diamondback, these are the 8x42s, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say an 8x42 or a 10x42, you know, I always edge towards a little bit more magnification, even though maybe I probably shouldn't.
I know
you do. Or it's not necessary.
We've talked to optical engineers. We've talked to... You've used them yourself, and yet still you can't get it out of your head that you need. You just feel this need for more.
Because we can have it, Jim. But no, 8x42, you got just a phenomenal configuration, really, for a variety of applications. And in a closer quarter scenario, you're going to get a larger exit pupil, right? So, like, if you're in the timber, things like that. I shouldn't have said closer quarter. I think it's a magnification there. But you're a little bit larger exit pupil with going with the 8 power. And sometimes less magnification can be an asset.
Well, when you say larger exit pupil, are you talking about, I mean, exit pupil in terms of it can help you a little bit in low-light scenarios?
Right.
But then also something that I think people confuse exit pupil and all this is another thing you get with lower magnification is a wider field of view.
Right.
Not because of the exit pupil, but just by nature of not being so zoomed in on something.
Right.
So, yeah,
right.
There's two different things there. But
so, you know, subject acquisition, right? You know, I mean, if you're in the timber or even, you know, looking 200-300 yards away, that's not that far for an 8-power binocular,
yeah.
right? So you're going to be able to pick up what you're looking at or, you know, and just be able to glass more territory, even if you haven't spotted it with the naked eye prior.
Yeah, we got to go back. If you get the chance, now I'm having trouble recalling exactly, but you got to go back and listen to a podcast called Binoculars, Everything You Ever Wanted to Know with Mike McDowell. He also brought up a thing called Twilight Factor.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting. It's the eye's ability to discern movement and all these other things in lower light scenarios. And it goes against conventional wisdom or thought as to, you know, what magnification, objective size, and all that would be best in low light. It's an interesting
That's
thing.
True. That's
it would
true.
Take probably more than 10 minutes even to get into if we were trying to describe it. But go back and check that one out if you're curious. But Mark, why is there a spotting scope on the table if we're talking about Midwestern hunting? That seems, I mean, we have a Diamondback 16 to 48 by 65. So not the biggest spotting scope on the planet, but a good mid-size mm-hmm. spotting scope. But 16 to 48 power, though, we're talking about like 3-9 rifle scopes, talking about 8-power binos, and then we pull out this big daddy.
So I'd say this is going to be for long-range observation, and this could be a scouting scenario. This could be during the hunting season, but you're trying to check out something, a piece of property that's really far away, and you just either can't get close at the time or you don't want to get close at the time. And then a lot of people, you know, I mean, we live in the modern age is here. People want to record things. They want to take pictures, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
And you can certainly use these spotting scopes as a long lens and catalog. Maybe you have a piece of property and you're trying to take pictures of all the different bucks on your property. And rather than be like, yeah, I saw a nice one today, or going off memory, I mean, you can really you know, start to break down the deer that you're seeing in different locations and get a good look at them and have those pictures.
Yep. And we have an angled on the table. Angled tends to be most popular, just in general, of spotting scopes for us. But let's say around the Midwest, you're driving around the truck and you're trying to assess a property or whatever, a piece of land, and so you're just sort of parked on the side of a road.
Mm-hmm.
Which one is, again, I've seen people use both angled and straight out of a vehicle, and it just seems as though the angle at which you're looking out can depend.
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly use an angled spotting scope on a car window mount. You've got the rotating collar here. Personally, you know, if I was doing a lot of that, I'd probably go with a straight. You know, it's obviously going to work in the field as well, but it's just a little bit more line of sight. It's a little bit more intuitive. Your neck angle in a vehicle is going to be such that...
Yeah, because, like, I guess I've always thought if you have an angled and the spotting scope is directly almost perpendicular to how the front seat faces out the front of the car, then you can... do the old sideways turn, right, and almost have it turn right into you and look out. And then, of course, you're sort of looking forward out the windshield and then look out the side, which is kind of goofy.
Yeah.
But it is seemingly more comfortable than having to peer around the spotting scope and get behind it if you're looking directly out the side.
Sure.
But then, if you're looking more forward over like a side mirror and you got a straight, then you can get right behind it. Whereas with an angled, you're trying to find like a goofy angle.
Yeah. Right. I mean, if I was doing a lot of car window stuff, I'd definitely probably go with the right. Go with the straight.
Then, of course,
version.
Once you get out of the truck, it seems as though most people, again, just prefer the angled. For the scenarios we're talking about, we're mm-hmm. not talking about like any super high angle, like, you know, mountain goat or sheep stuff where you're way above them looking down where a straight would be handy or whatever else. We're mostly just talking about standing on a tripod or sitting behind a tripod.
Yep.
Well, what do you think, Mark?
I think we about got it covered.
I think we did, too.
I think a person could hit the whitetail woods with all these things and do quite well.
Exactly. And to your point, the spotting scope, not the first thing you should go for.
Right.
But if it seems to make sense, go for it for sure. But otherwise, let's just say that make that, instead of saying four pieces of equipment that we'd say are absolutely necessary, we'll say 3.5. But 3, it's not too bad. Not too bad. Not super complicated. And depending on what you get, it can also suit you if you go elsewhere and hunt other game, too.
Yep. And whitetail seasons, or at least as we stand right now, this is September 1, Jim. Dove opener here in Wisconsin and probably a lot of other places as well. The weather's still nice, so even though a lot of rifle whitetail seasons are a couple months out, if you've got the time to practice with your gun and get it sighted in now, it's nice to do because it's not freezing cold and there's not snow everywhere and you're not dealing with weather and... all that good stuff. Plan ahead.
Normally, you hate being proactive.
We're not pros at planning ahead, but we'll tell other people to do it.
Sure. Yeah. I see. Do as we say, not as we do.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Hopefully, this helps some of you out who are trying to get your last-minute preparations for this hunting season together in terms of your optic suite, so to speak. So if you have any questions, that's certainly something we can answer. Hit us up on Instagram or hit us up in the YouTube comments, and we'd be happy to help out. So, yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks,
happy hunting and shooting out there. Bye.
Bye.